Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Musculoskeletal pain with aging is a common problem. It's often associated with many specific disorders. And maybe I'm just looking for sympathy, but I'm tired of hurting. And so I've arranged this program to discuss the general recommendations for the prevention and treatment of this common issue. The goal is to help prevent disability with aging. Our guests are physical therapist Wally Wilson, who's been with us a number of times in the past. He's currently working with United Physical Therapy and Providence Home Health. And also in the studio with the two of us is physician assistant Heather Pollard, who works with Mike Arza Husky. Mike's been here as long as I have, and I still don't know how to pronounce his name, who is here in Anchorage. You can reach us during the next almost hour-long period of time in a couple of ways. Our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Before we get into my physical complaints, Wally and Heather, let's learn a little bit about both of you. And Wally, I'm going to start with you. If you'd want to tell us a little bit about physical therapy and also, as while you're at it, what you're doing with Providence Home Health, if it differs significantly.
Yeah, well, thanks, and thanks for asking back. Physical therapy, many of you might know, is a fantastic field, I think. And we get to work with people in different kinds of settings in all ages. My wife is a pediatric physical therapist, and I work primarily half of my work week. I'm at United Physical Therapy, and half of my work week I'm at Providence Home Health Physical Therapy. So people come in, we do an evaluation, work with the physicians, the physician's assistants such as Heather, and come up with a treatment plan. In many cases, it's musculoskeletal injuries. In many cases, it's the over 50-year geriatric population, which we're talking about today. So the two settings I work in are vastly different in terms of the outpatient setting. Someone comes to the clinic at United, and they actually drive their car or get a ride. In the home health setting, people are technically homebound. So we're working on some very fundamental type physical therapy aspects and exercises for home mobility.
Okay. All right. Heather?
Dr. Woodard, thanks for having me. Like you said, my name is Heather Pollard. I'm a physician assistant with Dr. Mike Orza Husky and Associates. We work in family medicine and sports medicine. Dr. Mike was the first sports medicine certified doc here in Alaska. We particularly enjoy all of our patients, but the athletes as well. We see them for a variety of things related to PT. We end up sending quite a few people to physical therapy related to how to get back to their sport or to work in how to get into sports, or they're hurting or something along those lines, it's failing them occupationally. How I help in that field is I am a quote-unquote extender of my physician. And a lot of people don't know what a physician assistant is, so I'm going to take just a minute to describe that. I assist the physician. Does that mean that I'm going in with him to the procedures, the patient rooms, whatever? Sometimes yes, but oftentimes no. I have my own patient load, and I simply see patients. And if I need some background reference or a second eye, he's there to offer assistance and to help.
Okay. And both of you have some experience in dealing with those in my age group, this aging baby boomer group and their complaints?
Yes.
Yeah. Thad, I actually turned 50 not too long ago, so I'm kind of identifying
thing
with you more than I have in the past.
And I was going to ask you if you're hurting anywhere.
Usually, the past couple shows, he opens about my hair. You think about my hair this time.
What hair?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so it is nice to see when patients come in, and like if Heather sends someone over, one thing that I frequently tell the people in physical therapy, and this would be the outpatient setting, is I want you to be in the middle of a good conversation. I know with Dr. Mike and Heather that patient is in the middle of a good conversation. They come in, I write a plan of care for physical therapy based on what they had found and set some goals, and then I will send this report back to Heather or Dr. Mike, what we call a plan of care that might say 2 to 3 times a week for the next 6 to 8 weeks to address these limitations. And We all enjoy working with the athletes, but I think one of the things that we tend to age as our patients do, right?
Oh,
we,
yes, absolutely.
We tend to see an older demographic. So I've probably since his 50th birthday have really enjoyed, and my mind is more open to people like Thad.
Well, an athlete, are you calling him not an athlete?
They're all athletes.
Dr. Woodard, yeah. That's my point, is yeah. We're all athletes. We all enjoy some sort of physical activity.
And when you tell somebody who's 80 years old, I frequently tell people, this is kind of like a coach-athlete relationship, mm-hmm. I think. And it kind of, if they were a former athlete in their 20s and 30s, it kind of gives them something to connect to. And we can certainly overdo it, or you could underdo it.
Exactly.
And we're just going to kind of monitor that and see where this plays out in terms of your function and return.
All right. So before we get into the details, I always like to get some definition, some understanding. And I think the main thing I'd like to talk about now is what are the tissues we're talking about when we talk about musculoskeletal health? What specific parts of the body are we talking about in terms that may come up during the program today?
Well, I think as the musculoskeletal, I mean, the soft tissue of the muscle complex and the muscles attached to the bone via tendons, and our bones and joints are bound together by more static ligamentous type tissue. You put all that together, and you can look at an individual muscle, and you can have tightness or weakness, but as a therapist and a clinician, you see somebody move, you can see abnormalities or quality of motion, I would say, when somebody walks into your clinic, mm-hmm. or you walk into their home, which kind of talk about a big picture, that kind of puts the in my mind the big picture of what does their motion look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about two more terms come to my mind. Cartilage. What's cartilage? What are we talking about there?
Cartilage is on the end of the bones, and it's a shiny substance. It's used, to make a smooth joint movement.
Yeah, it's lubricating.
Yeah,
and with age, all of these things have their problems. Fascia is a term that's sometimes used.
And so, fascia surrounds the muscle, and you know is bound together. Kind of, you think of the butcher. You see the muscle. Encased in muscle fascia, which...
It's the stuff in the muscle that's kind of a glistening white stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Fair to say?
Fair to say.
Okay. All right, we already got a caller, so let's take Chloe's phone call. Chloe, what can we do for you?
I have a question. I am unfortunately one of those people that cannot afford the insurance that my employer has presented. So here is my question. I'm 51 years old, and I have had a slipped disc in my neck for years. It really didn't bother me unless I got super stressed out, and then it would lock up. And now that I'm 51, I am feeling two discs in my neck. One seems to be very low in my neck, and one is, like, right at my throat line, which, when I got stressed out, this was about a month and a half ago, it locked. I mean, literally locked my head forward. And I've seen old people that carried their neck and forward constantly.
Right.
And I'm afraid that this is going to happen to me. Is there anything I can do other than hormones? Because I mean, I've been to the doctor and it's what he wanted to shoot me with. And I was like, I'm tentative on that one.
Okay.
I would do anything like exercise or vitamins. I'd do anything to try to make this better, but it's been locking up a lot, and it's very painful. And I notice when I sleep, it hurts. And I notice when I sleep, I literally have to tuck my chin into my chest to relieve the pain.
Okay.
So I'm worried.
All right. Let's see what we can do for it. And I'm going to give you at least a little bit of unfortunate proviso. None of us are orthopedic surgeons, and sometimes some of these issues may need more expertise than we can give you, but we are here to see what we can do to help you. Who wants to tackle?
I'll start, and then I'll hand off to Wally, if that's okay.
Sure.
So first of all, what comes to mind is, of course, you want to, an x-ray would be wonderful, but I do understand finances and that we live in a real world here. Now, assuming that I had an x-ray in front of me and I were looking at you and you don't have the want or need to go to an orthopedic surgeon, at that point I would tell you that motion is lotion. And you'd say, well, Heather, I can't get any lotion because I can't get any motion. I'm locked up. And then I'd say, okay, well, that sounds like it's a muscle and a ligament issue, in which case we need to do some ice and heat and some light massage by yourself or a loved one, and then get you on some simple, what we call range of motion exercises to help prevent further degeneration and maladaption or bad adaption habits that we have whenever we're stressed. Wally?
And I certainly agree with that. And I think that most of our postural challenges seem like our you talked about a forward head. We tend to sit in a posture during our work day or whatnot where our shoulders and head get forward and we kind of lean a little forward at the hips. And that doesn't set us up well for good mechanics down the road. I actually happened to treat somebody in the past few weeks that came to my office, and she was, told me she had been to the ER, I think in the past 6 months, 10 to 12 times because of this back and neck pain, which was debilitating. And you know, that was quite a story hearing that. And we simply went through some, and she'd been given a bunch of medications that she was a little bit, was not fired up about in terms of taking. They were providing some relief to allow her to come to the clinic at United. But simply putting her in a postural position, she was very forward head, very forward shoulders, leaning slightly at the trunk, and she was not really aware of how she moved. So, and as Heather says, motion is lotion. Practicing what you probably do know is good posture, and maybe have somebody take a picture of you or and see what your alignment might be during your posture during the day. But you also touched on stress, and stress can certainly be a critical player, anxiety, in manifesting the symptoms. So that's something you need to consider of how you might address that, what those trigger points are.
I was just going to ask one really quick question. My other problem with my neck seems to be correlated, and I don't want to say this on the radio, but I'm going to really need help. I'm a very tiny person with very large breath, and I feel that I have to lean forward because it's just hard to hold all that weight up constantly at my age.
Right.
And I mean, I'm not heavy, and I don't know what to do. Yeah. I mean, I really don't know what to do.
I'm going to throw in a little bit of medical perspective, and I'm anxious if Heather or Wally will comment, but what happens with time is these discs between our vertebrae do begin to lose some of this elasticity, this cushion effect, and as a result, our vertebrae become closer together, basically age, time, and gravity. And we have joints on those vertebrae, and we call facets. And my guess is a lot of your catching is these facets are getting somewhat caught. I could be wrong. There could be some changes in the vertebrae themselves that, because they're closer together, get caught together. Spurs of the bone, sometimes these things are referred to. And there's not, I mean, there are things that can be done about that. We're talking about surgery. So what you're trying to do is improve things over time. And since you're talking about you have some weight moving you forward, I'm thinking things that may help strengthen your back and your neck just to protect these joints would be helpful. And before I ask them to comment on that, I would also like to say I think the problem you're referring to with people with stooped forward is a particular illness called ankylosing spondylitis, which is a inflammatory disorder of the vertebrae, which you probably do not have. And doesn't mean that, you know, that you'll end up like some of the people I'm envisioning you talking about necessarily. But what about my suggestion about doing things to strengthen the back, since she's worried about a lot of, lots of things getting into core strength? And then there definitely are exercises that improve the strength of the neck that might be helpful for her.
Yeah, I think you're right on there. A lot of times, especially as women, we tend to have stronger muscles in front, and also that helps us hunch over a little bit, than in back. So a lot of times what you see is you see people pushing their shoulders back, and I'm doing it as I'm talking to you because I'm trying to explain it to myself. pushing our shoulders back and working on the muscles in the back, and that would be helpful. And over time, you would build those muscles stronger, which is where Wally's expertise would come in place, but that would lead to improving your posture, i.e. you're bending over due to what you have been given.
Do you have a brace that would actually help me pull my shoulders back? Because it really does feel better when I'm pulling them back, but it's just something that's very hard for me to do constantly. Mm-hmm. Is there like a brace or something, or something that would strap the back of my shoulders so I could pull them back?
There are some braces. I'm not, in some cases I advocate some, but more as a cueing, a temporary thing, or if there was a particular job requirement that you might have that was protecting it with some lifting and forward bending. But I don't remember the name of the thoracic brace. It kind of helps the shoulder blades pull a little bit tighter together that some people wear during the day, which tends to be a little bit more comfortable. But in addition to the back, quite often, if you imagine someone standing up and you're looking at them from the side and they're slightly tilted forward, either bending at the hips, usually the case, well, our back muscles, our trunk is almost falling forward. So our back muscles are constantly working, trying to pull us backward. So sometimes, in addition to what was talked about in terms of strengthening the back muscles, is also challenging and strengthening the abdominal muscles, because they are kind of relatively on slack. They're not doing their, you have this spine that goes vertically and you have this wrap of musculature on the front side, your abdominals, and on the back you have your back extensors. And quite often these back extensors, for different reasons, are very tight, and these abdominal muscles on the front are not really pulling their weight in the situation. Mm-hmm. So mechanically, working on little things, maybe just pulling your belly button towards the back of your spine, not aggressively, mm-hmm. you'd be surprised, or lifting your sternum. If you thought about lifting your sternum up an inch, that can actually put your shoulder blades back in a position to get your shoulders over your hip. And the young lady I was telling you about before, I simply did some relaxed breathing with her and put her in a non-forward position to where she was balanced posturally, and her pain decreased by 75% within a few minutes. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't own that posture yet, right? She has to learn how to work through that, and it's going to be a daily reminder. But it's a sense of awareness which is perpetual.
Chloe, are you having any weakness or pain going down your shoulders, weakness in your hands, anything like that?
Yeah, I've got my right thumb is going numb, which very odd for me. I've really never had any problems with any of that, but for some reason my thumb just has been going number and number, and now it's almost like a constant numbness at the tip.
One likely, and underline likely, explanation is those vertebral disc spaces have gotten so narrow that the nerves running out between these vertebrae are getting affected, and you're beginning to get something that's similar to sciatic pain that people talk about in their hips down their legs. And so that's unfortunately one of the real indications of perhaps needing surgery. Nowadays, surgery for these kind of things are tried as a last ditch, but when you're having weakness and progressive pain, you really may need to think about other approaches. So what I'm hearing here today is, maybe some physical therapy things aimed at increasing the right amount of muscles, and which may allow you to have a little bit more ability, may solve your problem. But if you're progressively having more and more pain in especially in your arms and weakness, you really need to have that addressed, I think, or it'll be a permanent loss.
So when I go to see the doctor, do I just tell him what I've told you? Because I do have an appointment. I'm really worried about this, and I'm going to have to fork out the money. But
good.
I don't know exactly how to explain it to him other than I can't put my shoulders back constantly. I wish I could, but mm-hmm. it's so heavy in front that it's just hard. And then my neck is, even when I'm doing the correct posture, I look at myself and it feels like my neck is still throwing itself forward.
Right.
So do I just
talk about
sciatic pain or?
Yeah, my answer would be exactly as straightforward and as clear. Take notes, write it down before you go in. Say, this is what's happening to me. Here are my worries. And don't forget to talk about that thumb pain or numbness that's going on. And what do I need to do next? What's the most efficient way to address these problems? And depending on your physician, they may suggest physical therapy. They may suggest an orthopedic evaluation, not necessarily for surgery. Again, I think most orthopedic surgeons nowadays are going to do everything they can to keep that from happening. But those are the kinds of people that would be more likely to be involved in further care.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys' help.
Yeah. Let me make sure I'm not speaking out of turn from anybody here. Heather, you agree?
No,
with
I completely concur. I think that, like Dr. Woodard said, please don't forget to mention that right thumb numbness.
Yep. That's an important
numbness
one.
Numbness in my thumb.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and any weakness. But your fears, too.
Yes.
Right? Don't be afraid to be really upfront. And
well, I need to work, and yep. I can't work if I'm plunging my head forward more yep. and more and more. So yep. it's scaring me. But yep. I will talk to the doctor about everything that you just discussed, and thank you for your help.
All right. Good luck, Chloe. Before, we've got a couple more callers. Before we get to them, I want to also just address this issue of what's happening specifically. What do we know happens to muscles, ligaments, cartilage, and so forth with time that helps us understand the fact that you can do everything right, but we're not going to be living forever. What's changing?
Well, and talking about the muscles first, when we if you want to be depressed, Google and say effects of aging, and it's just this, everything is going downhill. Metabolically, your muscles, your cardio function. But in terms of the muscles, we start having some muscle degradation or wear it wasting away after 30. It can vary depending on how much activity you might do. But the muscle mass lost is going to happen. And certainly exercise of resistive type exercises, well coordinated and carried out, can significantly offset that process, and people can actually make strength gains. But it's pretty significant in terms of the loss of muscle mass from a 30-year-old to a 70-year-old, and that's where a lot of the risk factors, when you get in the 60s and 70s and those that live in the 80s, of having falls and issues as a result of weakness because of loss of muscle mass and control.
And that is largely happening in the bones as well. And I would just throw in there that to remember that from a broad spectrum here, it is important to remember that we're all animals, and animals have a programmable lifespan. And what do I mean by that? We have developmental stages. And yes, we can, for instance, there's studies out there, good studies that show that runners live longer, but they live the length of time longer that they have been running. So we all have a specific quote-unquote developmental stages that we go through. We can manipulate those a little bit. There's birth, there's puberty, menopause, and death. And what we see is that actually there's hormone-related changes that are occurring in our bones and our muscles as well. And so that's really important to keep in mind whenever we look at this. Your bones will start to break down over time. We call that bone loss, osteopenia, osteoporosis, and it is something that we do test for in specific people. We should always be evaluating that in our patients. So to be honest with you, those are the things that I think are most important from a medical perspective whenever you're looking at a patient coming to you saying, I have pain. I am aging. Are these two related? The answer is yes.
And so these ligaments and tendons, the tendons attaching bones to our muscles to bones, and the ligaments are the ligaments holding bone to bone are also becoming a little less flexible, mm-hmm. a little bit tighter. So mobility around the joint decreases. And I even read somewhere that we have different kind of muscle fibers. Some are what called fast twitch and slow switch. And there's a tendency to move towards more slow switch twitch as we age. So everything's slowing down. It's not that you can prevent it, but you can do a lot to at any age to improve all of these
things. Right, manipulate it.
It's very important to understand not doing anything is a lot worse than trying to do something.
And
it's one of the important messages here today, even though, you know, you're not going to beat time.
You know, stiffness is in some ways you can think of as our body trying to protect itself to be stable. So I certainly recognize that in working with people. But one thing I always tell, you know, in my mind is repeating is the body is not stiff. The mind is stiff. As we get older, and I think my father's 90, so he's actually, I would say, two generations removed from me, right? I would say a 70-year-old is one generation. I would say people probably in their 70s are talking about this when the running craze and the exercise craze started forming in the early 70s. There's a different set of instructions and expectations that the 70-year-old has that my father has as a 90-year-old in terms of what do we believe is normal for aging? And what I'm excited about is when I, you know, work with people who are older and exercise, strength, and these things that can help increase your function and your quality of aging are fascinating. I hope that is even going to be more as my generation and the generation after me and my children are able to do more. Yeah. At an older age.
Well, yeah, we're definitely living longer and longer and longer, and the important thing is to try to make that as functional as we can.
Quality, right. Quality.
Right, quality.
Conrad, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, my story, I have, for 2 years now, I've been struggling with chronic Achilles tendonitis on my right ankle. And my story started back in October of 2012. I just finished my fifth marathon. I was 22 at the time. And then in February of 2013, the tendonitis started acting up. And so I went to the doctor, did the whole boot thing, no avail there, and we tried physical therapy in the summer of 2013 as well, and that didn't help either. And I guess the problem with what the doctor's telling me, the problem with my tendonitis right now is that I have a Haglund deformity.
Yep.
It's causing the bursa and the tendon to swell.
Yeah.
So my question is to you guys is, you know, the doctor's telling me, yeah, I need to get surgery.
Right.
But, you know, I've tried the chiropractor, I've tried the physical therapy, I've tried the boot and
right.
icing and exercises at home. And so right. my question to you is, do you think that surgery is...
All right, I'm gonna ask my other two guests, and you said it's a Haglund deformity.
Yeah, it's a Haglund deformity on my right ankle.
Yeah, I think I've actually, believe it or not, as a pediatrician, run into this. I'll explain that if nobody else knows what we're talking about. But any other ideas that you guys have about? So this is a very frustrating problem for this guy, obviously.
I'm interested to see what you have to say, Dr. Woodard, actually.
I don't recall the name of it, but I had a patient who was a dancer and had developed really significant chronic heel pain because of it. And eventually with MRIs and everything, they did find that this, I think it was called a Haglund deformity. It's just somewhat unusual abnormality of the heel, and it was just causing impingement problems. It's just like a growth of the bone. And probably there is little else you can do. And for her, it was successful. And it's not unreasonable to get make sure you get a couple of opinions about this. But I'm thinking it's somewhat the way your heel is formed and your affinity to exercise don't work out well together. And so there may be no other option.
Yeah, I was afraid you'd say that.
It's something that mainly orthopedic surgeons, particularly maybe orthopedic surgeons dealing a lot with sports medicine or heels, feet problems, may know about it. I might be absolutely wrong about the same thing, but it sounds very, very familiar to me.
And Conrad, how many marathons have you done again?
I've done five. My the one in 2012 was my fifth one.
Okay, and when did you, and this has been ongoing, that's what I was, when did it really get that significant?
It started in February of 2013, and I actually just went to the gym this morning, and I tried running on it, and it was still, still a little bit stiff, and I'll tell you what, it has gotten better since February 2013, but I'm still not 100%.
Are you able to do things such as stationary biking? Is that okay with it?
Yeah, I can stationary bike, I can do my day-to-day, I can go to work and everything just fine. It's just that when I start running, that's when it acts up.
Yeah, I just would suggest keep the fitness level up, with the stationary bike or the alternative means. And it sounds like you've actually approached it very logically and have thrown a lot of things at it that none of them have ultimately been effective. And I agree, I would maybe find someone else. Well, find someone in terms of an orthopedic surgeon maybe to talk to and see what that might look like.
I would agree as well. And I would also just throw out there, if you're trying to avoid surgery, then, just make sure that you're doing a good regimens before and after. So warm up properly, cool down properly, whether that be with heating pads and ice and stretching, however that may be. I'm sure you found some good techniques from PT.
One of the things with the exercise is when people undergo, and you've been experienced with running marathons, but people tend to associate, exercise routine and classes with muscular strength and cardio strength. But one of the things as a therapist we see is we really want them to talk to them about connective tissue, cartilage tolerance for this activity. So it's anytime you're starting something new, we might equate that arm soreness as something you're doing, with a push-up. And it might certainly be some muscle fatigue, but it could be something that is also manifesting in a little cartilage at your elbow, wrist, or shoulder, for instance, I'm saying. And to really get people to be aware of training the cartilage as also something to consider other than training your heart aerobically or your muscles in a strength way or also working about your dietary or whatever that might be you're eating. And that's where I think that can rear its ugly head kind of behind the scenes, and we thought it was muscle pain or just fatigue, and it was actually more tissue irritation on a cartilage level, which was more difficult to overcome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck. It is that time again where we have to take a short break. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. After this very short break, we'll continue our discussion on musculoskeletal pain, particularly with aging, with Wally Wilson and Heather Pollard. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is physical therapist Wally Wilson and physician assistant Heather Pollard, and we're discussing musculoskeletal pain, particularly with aging. If you've got questions or comments, our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local number, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, if you're listening to this program between 9 and 10 p.m. on a Monday, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast, and there's nobody here to answer your questions. You can always go to our archives, however, at alaskapublic.org and listen to the program again. Let's go ahead and take another caller. Becky, you're on line one.
Yes. I'm 74 right now, and about 10 years ago, I fell and broke my arm, and it hurt. And even after it healed, it hurt. And then someone told me about glucosamine, and I tried it, and I'm fine now.
That's great.
Awesome.
You have a question, or are you just advertising for glucosamine?
Well, I just wanted to mention it because I mentioned it to a friend of mine who had foot and leg pain, and she tried it, and she's fine now, too.
All right. There's been a number of studies looking at glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. And when you take 100 people, let's say, for example, and you really do a good study where they're blind and not know whether they're taking it or not, most of the evidence suggests that I know of that it's no different in the two groups. So it doesn't mean it may not have helped you. It doesn't mean that maybe it was just coincidence that you were getting better, you and your friend. But I would have to say the best science that I know shows no significant consistent advantages, although it does depend on what you're talking about. A broken bone is different. Most people are taking it for joint pain. But as far as I know, for all of these things, it's not been consistently shown to be effective.
Well, it helped me.
Can't argue with it. If you're better, that's okay. As long as you didn't get side effects, you know, it's always the risk of taking medicines or treatments and the risk of not taking them. You have to balance out.
Right. Well, the only warning is that you shouldn't take it if you're allergic to shellfish.
Okay.
Most people, anecdotally, most people, placebo or not, tell me they respond favorably towards it by far. So I would, and the side effects don't seem to be, other than allergy reactions, significant to my knowledge.
Yeah, no, I would say that there's some studies out there that do show some benefit with it, whether it's placebo or not. You have to have an actual tool to have a placebo effect. So I would say if it's working well for you, then continue doing so.
Okie doke. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Richard, you're on line one.
Oh, hi, Dr. Woodard. I wanted to bring up the subject of statins and the pains that can be caused by that. I've been taking Lipitor for probably about 8 years, and this last spring I started suffering from all sorts of muscle and joint pains that I couldn't find any explanation for. A regular physician tried treating me for gout. He said he thought I might have a high level of the indicators for gout, and treated me for that for about a month or so. And let's see, I was. He said that my uric acid levels were down, and so I should be good to go. And I said, "Man, I'm still hurting." And he said, "Well, that's just getting old." And I got a second opinion from another physician, and I was going through the list of medications I was taking, and as soon as I said Lipitor, he said, stop taking it. Don't take another dose. Yep. If you haven't taken it today, do not take it tonight, and just quit completely. You'll probably be feeling better in about 30 days, and it'll take about 6 months for it to completely get out of your system. I got a book from that he recommended called The Truth About Statins, and it includes muscle morbidity, tendonitis, cognitive dysfunction, tendency towards Lou Gehrig's disease. let's see, and there are half a dozen more that I can't remember right offhand. But the pain that I was experiencing was excruciating. I couldn't sleep. I was afraid I was going to have to quit working because I just couldn't bear the pain. And I don't know how familiar you folks are with statins, but anybody who has a sudden onset of pain that they can't explain, if they're taking statins, I would suggest that they discuss quitting the statins with her physician.
You know, I'll take this one if that's okay, Dr. Woodard. So statins are a good drug in the right place at the right time for the right person. They're a very good drug at lowering cholesterol and so on and so forth, and helping with lifestyle modification that we're unable to attain and keeping our hearts happy and healthy. That being said, they do have several side effects, but the one major significant side effect that sticks out to me is something called myalgia, muscle pain, muscle breakdown. It is actually causing muscle breakdown. Your physician can order a test called creatine kinase, and it's a muscle breakdown test after you're on a statin, and make sure that it's not causing this muscle breakdown in you, because it is actual, it's real, it is occurring, and it's measurable. Some patients say, no, you know, I have this. For instance, in my clinic, we do this study on anybody who's on a statin, and they're creatine kinase is not all that elevated, and they say, no, I'm telling you that since I started this statin, then that, you know, I'm having these pains. And I say, okay, well, let's do what we call a 2-in-1 study. And that is where you go on it for 2 weeks, you try it, you come off of it for a week, you go back on it for 2 weeks. If you can prove to me at that point in time that you have a reoccurrence of the muscle pain, then I say you are absolutely right, 100%. Now, if you just want to stop the medication, I say you are the patient. Absolutely, I will agree with that. That is okay. Let's look at what else we can do to lower your cholesterol. But you are very right in that, and I'm sorry that you underwent that experience with excessive pain related to the medication.
Okay, thank you. Also, the second physician to whom I went mentioned that that statins are now the most highly prescribed drug in the world, and they're pushing physicians to prescribe them prophylactically if a patient's cholesterol level is high, even if it's in the normal range, but still a little bit high. And I think that's what my original physician was doing. And he said that they've even started coming out, and of the drug companies, that is, have even come running out and started saying that statins should be prescribed for everybody who's over 30. Mm-hmm. This is a prophylactic measure. And they're making a ton of money on it.
There's a definitely a lot of information about the statins and causing pain and the appropriate use of them, and that generally is true of any treatment. I want to keep coming back to the logic of any treatment. You have to consider the risk of treatment versus mm-hmm. the risk of not treating, and for some people, the risk of statins is worth it, just like the risk of anti-cancer medications might be worth it, depending on each individual situation. I wouldn't argue that physicians are at times under pressure to from different sources of information. Next week, we're going to talk about opioids for pain, and there's a somewhat sordid story about getting us into trouble with that. In general, physicians want to do the right thing for everybody, and any treatment, whether it's medication or not, has some risk, and you got to balance it with the risk of not taking it. So I'd hate for people who really are having no problems on statins to give up on them. Although there is some discussion, as I said, about what's the appropriate place to be in management. So thanks for your call, Richard.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Appreciate your story. Yep. John, you're on line one.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Turning 71 this week, I stay physically active quite a bit. Over 45 years ago, somewhere in there, I broke my number 5 and number 6 vertebrae, or didn't break it, I cracked it. And I've had back pain ever since. I'm physically active. I was doing sheetrock work this weekend, so it's bothering me a little bit. But and the one thing I do every morning is there's a doTERRA blue rub that I put on my back, and it makes the pain go away. Is there anything else I should be doing to control the pain?
Sometimes with some stiffness and pain such as that, light exercise in terms mm-hmm. of a warm-up of exercise. A lot of, you know, when people, when we get up in the morning, and we hear this and more with the 50 and older population, we feel stiff. Well, what is that stiffness? I mean, it can be a myriad of things. And sometimes it's when you're sleeping, your nervous system is very on a very low level of arousal, and you suddenly get up and out of bed. That's gravity is a big load on the body, if you will, a shock to the system. Well, in terms of before you might go from supine sleeping to sitting up or standing up, maybe some light knee to chest or some abdominals, some gluteal squeezes, or just some gentle light mobility exercises to prepare your body from supine to sit. In increasing the temperature, I mean, our muscles with blood flow, as we use them, increase our temperature and increases our tissue elasticity and mobility. That could have a profound effect.
I would agree with that, Wally. That's exactly what I would say. And just for verification, that is your lumbar vertebrae that you were talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And although that what Wally said would be true for any of it, but I would definitely recommend some light exercise. Not only is it good for the muscles, it also helps combat arthritis, which is probably what's giving you so much grief and setting in there as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Let me ask a question about stretching. Is stretching helpful? What kind of stretching is helpful?
That's two questions.
All right. Okay. All right. One.
Cutting him off.
Pick one, Wally.
Take the first one.
Okay. So there are people out there that think stretching is just terrible. Yep. And then there's people out there that think it's the great. So there's a continuum. Mm-hmm. Generally, if people come in, or if I see somebody in the home health setting, just say the gentleman before, 70 years old, has some back pain or some knee pain, and most people probably haven't felt the benefits of stretching because they don't know how to stretch. Nobody has shown them.
Right.
And they've been years in a work-related posture or static position in sitting. So The most basic type of stretching that most people begin to think about, I think, is called static stretching. So, for instance, you could be sitting in a chair and have your one leg out in front of you and be stretching your hamstrings. And that's something that you're actually, you know, stretching the muscle fiber out, and you would hold for 20 or 30 seconds. So there's a lot of controversy. I think it's great. Another type of stretching is dynamic stretching, which is more kind of motion oriented, as I was telling the caller before, with motion increasing muscle temperature, blood flow, motor control to prepare yourself maybe before your run, before your workout. You can think of it as a kind of a warm up. If you watched NFL football yesterday, they're doing some dynamic, you know, stretching and motion things before they might play the game. So I'm a huge advocate of stretching. It's not necessarily the be all end all. But I am not, you know, and we see a skewed population, you know, so we people,
absolutely,
they come in with us with pain, and usually that to me is part of the answer in a lot of cases.
Right. I would absolutely agree with that. Stretching is, motion is lotion. That's what I say. I think it goes as a good foundation statement.
Another thing that I've heard said, and I don't want to stress this because we have to have a lot of calls, but I mean, we talked about things. If it hurts, don't do it.
You know,
and if it does, you know, so you were talking about the guy earlier who was exercising and running and he could do all kinds of things. What I thought you were saying is, yeah, you want to stay in condition, do everything you can, but when it's hurting, I don't know. But
we were doing some talks with the fire department recently, and it was a great experience for all of us. but over there at the, that it was just something that popped in my mind recently, the t-shirt, no pain, no gain, or pain right. is, no, it was pain is weakness leaving the body. In every class, I said, I make a living out of that. Now there's a different type of pain you're working out or doing tough. But when you have joint pain and nerve type pain that's lasting well after the event, or the cartilage, you know, I talked before about the cartilage. That is the kind that needs to be recognized, and you need to back off sometimes.
Yeah. Generalizations get us in trouble. We need to be very, very specific. All right, Mary, you're on line one?
Yes, sir.
What can we do for you?
I just wanted to call you and say, let's see, I'm looking very closely at the age of 80, and I'm in about the same condition, but less span since I was 20.
Fantastic.
the big thing that I did, because when at my age, there was a war on and there was gas rationing and everything, and I walked everywhere.
That is a very good way to stay shape.
Didn't rush, didn't run, but I walked to school a mile and a half to and from, and so on and so on. And I got in the habit of walking a lot. Not rushing, not running, not jogging or anything, just walking, and I still do. I walk to the market and walk home again with my load of groceries. I don't drive the car. It's inconvenient, and it's close enough. It's only 6 or 8 blocks, and I'm not what I used to be, but I'm not falling apart either.
You know, one thing to me that really stands out with that is you had some habits formed early, and that's who you are. So a lot of times we're working with people, this walking or the exercise concepts, unfortunately, are newer than we would like to think. And trying to change one's mindset is to be consistent with it, to me, is really the ultimate challenge. What we do is not rocket science. We do some very technical things. But trying to set a person up for success to continue on their own after they see somebody in a home health setting or an outpatient setting. And with you, it's very ingrained. And, mm-hmm. and that's why I think you're so healthy and active at 80 years old.
Yeah, well, when I was at an age where kids now get a car or whatever, there was gas rationing, there was a war on, and nobody drove their car unless it was an emergency, like going to the hospital or something. We walked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't run. It was walk, and you made time for the walk. You carried your books to school and so on and so on. And you get in the habit of walking, and if you miss a half hour or an hour of walking to and from this, that, and the other during the day, your body misses it. It starts to yell at you. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It works. You get in the habit of walking to places to go if it's not too long. And a mile is not a long walk. It's a short walk.
Stay active, Mary. It's our advice.
Okay, well, tell folks. And living here in Alaska, this is gorgeous. You can go out all the time. You know, you don't roast off in the heat or anything. You have to wrap up a bit.
Yep,
but,
just a
you
bit.
You know, you get in the habit of walking. I walk every place. I walk to the store, I walk to the market, and I walk home. First of all, I'm cheap. I don't want to blow gasoline for a 6 block.
It also helps control weight, which is another problem that can aggravate our problems as we get older. So stay with it.
Okay, thank you very much. And I mean, I just learned it. Well, it was necessary when I was a child, and by the time I wasn't a child anymore, it was a habit.
You're an inspiration, Mary.
That's when you learn things the best. Our brains are not very good at unlearning things, so teaching kids the right things early is one of the most important things us pediatricians are trying to do. Good luck.
Well, take care and remind your people that most people around here in Alaska live in a climate where you can walk without getting heat stroke like I did in Los Angeles. You know, I mean, you can walk almost any place, and where I live, I can walk to the store, do my grocery shopping, walk home with a load of groceries, and I've walked about a mile and a half. And I've gotten good exercise and nice fresh air and not too terribly much smog.
Thanks for your call. All right, Bill, you're on line one.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Woodard. I'm going to be turning 67 this week, and I've been working out since I'm 35. And I kind of want to talk about prevention. You know, I've been doing cardio and load-bearing, but I don't see much about the latest research on what's the best way for people that are getting older in their 50s, in their 60s, in their 70s, how they should change their exercise regimen.
Good question.
Well, one thing I think of is change it. If you have to change it slowly. You know, it sounds, again, with you, as Mary, the previous caller, it's something you really enjoy doing. And if you're doing something and you enjoy it and you want to tweak it, maybe the groove is becoming kind of a rut. In terms of that, are you doing mostly like cycling or treadmill walking? What kind of tell me a little bit more about what your average couple
days? I've got arthritis in my left knee, so I do the recumbent bike.
Okay.
And then I do... load-bearing exercises. I've kind of stopped moving my spine quite a bit. I tend to do more isometric-type exercises with my spine, but I'd increase my repetitions on my other muscles, start with the big groups and then work down to the smaller muscles.
And what do you do in terms of your flexibility?
Not much. I really don't seem to, when I do stretching, I don't seem to get more. I do the dynamic stretching a little bit to kind of warm up, but I don't seem to get a greater range of motion as I try to stretch very much. So really haven't done much in that area.
There's been a lot of good research in the past few years about what you might have seen as the high-intensity interval training, shorter bouts. You're getting into those muscle fiber types that tend to waste away, those fast ones tend to atrophy with age more than the slower type 1 fibers. And one of the reasons, I think, is we don't stress that enough. But I say that with caution because that is something, if that's new to you, to be very prudent in how you approach that in terms of your workout ratio. It's like if you were doing a set of something for 30 seconds, 45 seconds to your rest ratio would be like workout one, rest 2 to 3, like maybe rest 1.5, 2 minutes, or have a different activity. And taking care of that cartilage, because a lot of times that's what's going to get what is challenged with lack of blood supply, and that's the tissue that will quite often, as we get a little bit older, pay the price of a bad technique. But I would also try to incorporate some stretching.
Okay. Is there a lot of research going on with elderly people and exercising?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, continually, especially as the baby boomers age. You yourself said that you are feeling that, you know, and what I would add is just simply balance. The greatest risk that you're going to face as you continue to healthily age is a fall. So ensuring that you, for one, have loose rugs and such picked up off the floor and help yourself not to trip and fall in the middle of the night going to the restroom or as you're taking out the dog or something, but also just to work on your ability to balance and catch yourself if you do start to fall.
You know, they say 1 in 3 people over 65 fall per year. That's tremendous.
That's astronomical, especially when you consider that's when we're screening
for osteoporosis. Yeah, and your bones are losing, you know, one of the things, exercise does help prevent osteoporosis and bone loss. So, I mean, basically, I think what the general idea here is as we age, we need to keep doing lots of different things. And if you have balance problems, standing with your eyes closed on one foot, I mean, there's all kinds of slow, progressive things you can do to help practice that balance issue, which you are not practicing, just like the fast stuff. If we don't practice using our muscles fast, they're probably going to lose that.
Yeah, and one of the things with falls, Heather reminded me of, was when people do have a fall, they get, I mean, who wants to have a fall? No one. Then you get kind of phobic, and then an elderly person might limit themselves, and they're not getting out as much and engaging because the fear of falling. Mm-hmm. So the fall has a, you know, exponential effect of limiting what they might have normally done.
One thing we've gotten very good at is, as you said at the beginning of the show, increasing the length of life. One thing we're learning to be good at is increasing the quality so that the last 5 years that we increased of your life are as beneficial to you as the previous 85.
We're just about done. There's not much time left. I think the general advice here is people need to keep moving. It's never too late to start. You can improve. There's good evidence you can improve strength and stamina in people who've never exercised very much at all.
And I would throw one out there that if you've never exercised and you're starting to get into it as you age, please be sure to go see a physician first. Make sure you get checked out.
Mm-hmm. Let me apologize. There's a number of questions we did not get to, and my apologies for that. Thanks very much to Heather Pollard and Wally Wilson for being with me today. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to continue this conversation on musculoskeletal pain, you can join KSKA on Facebook, and you can find that link at www.alaskapublic.org. On our next program, we're going to talk about the increased mortality and morbidity being associated with narcotics for non-cancer-related pain. Our guest is Dr. Gary Franklin of the University of Washington School of Public Health. So why not tune into Health and learn more Monday, January 12th at 2 p.m. Pat Yak is our Chief Content Officer at Alaska Public Media. Evan Erickson and Monica Goki helped to engineer today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Keep busy out there and keep moving. Thank you. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.